Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for a new episode of the Calcio Land podcast. And today we really have an exciting one planned for you. Of course, we're going to preview the big match between Juve and Napoli coming up on Sunday. We've been getting a ton of questions on how Sarri would hypothetically fit in at Chelsea, and we'll get in that. I think we have an ideal person to give us our take on that. We're going to name our winners and losers from the midweek matches in Serie A, get some picks and preview the weekend with our friend Thousand Names, and we have a few Twitter questions. We'll do some more on Monday. We just have a jam-packed episode today as is. So let's start with all the questions we've been getting on Sarri. So full disclosure, on our side, on Di Marzio's side, we have yet to write anything on Chelsea's interest on Sarri. There really hasn't been any reports at our end on that, but there's a lot of other places where this is being reported. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know, we were big Sarri fans here, but we've also pointed out maybe the things that he needs to improve a little bit on. And I think we have the perfect person to tell us hypothetically how he would fit in at Chelsea. Of course, our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. By now you guys know he's a big Chelsea fan since he's been doing over a year of these podcasts, and Sarri's been a big protagonist. He is an expert on Sarri as well. So, Alex, without further ado, tell us hypothetically how you think Sarri would fit in if he were to be Chelsea's next manager.
All right, well, I'm going to try not to get too excited because considering the style of football Chelsea's been playing lately, this is enough to get me to really start drooling, dreaming of Sarri on the touchline. But overall, David, from a style of play point of view, it would be a dream for Chelsea fans. Antonio Conte is known as a very defensive-minded manager, and as is Jose Mourinho. And if you exclude Gus Hiddink taking over as interim manager, that's been a large part of Chelsea's last 5 years, a lot of defensive football. So if they could switch over to the aesthetically pleasing Sarri football, that would be very welcomed by many, many Chelsea fans. I also think Antonio Conte, he did really well last year with the three-man defense, but now that everybody's changed to the three-man defense, it feels like, in the Premier League, I would very much welcome Sarri giving us the 4-3-3. I think you can't go wrong with a 4-3-3 if you have the right personnel, and I think Sarri certainly knows how to make a 4-3-3 work and how to make it very exciting to watch. CMs are very trendy right now, not CAMs, not CDMs, and Sarri's system kind of uses CMs pretty heavily. They got Zielinski, Jorginho, Hamsik, Alon, Diawara. CMs are huge in a 4-3-3, so if Sarri could find a Hamsik on Chelsea, I don't think it's Cesc Fabregas, but that would be very good because Chelsea owns a lot of people on loan or youth players that are potential really good CMs. So it'd be really welcomed from that point of view. The one thing that I'm nervous about, David, in a 4-3-3, Sarri has used pretty much the same front three for a long time now, Insigne, Mertens, and Cajon. And I'm actually kind of worried that he might just see Pedro, Willian, and Hazard and say, ah, that's pretty much the same. I'll just throw those three up there. Mertens is a short Belgian. Hazard's a short Belgian. I'll throw Hazard up at striker. So I am worried that Sarri may try to mirror it too much and may not look at a lot of different personnel when he already sees a similar front three at Chelsea like he had at Napoli. But overall, I would invite it. The other thing that I'm not too sure about, and I think a lot of Chelsea fans would agree with me here, is Sarri is very rigid, as we know, with his rotation.
Yeah.
That will not be good for Chelsea. Chelsea fans are salivating for them finally to include youth. And if Chelsea are in the Europa League next year, they'll be playing on Thursdays and then most likely on Sundays. That's not a lot of time in between games. They're going to have to rotate. Hopefully, Sarri will learn from his mistakes this year. Of course, I'm speaking if he actually takes over Chelsea, which once again is a long shot. But hypothetically speaking, he would need to learn from his mistakes and he would need to rotate. And Chelsea fans will have a short fuse if he consistently ignores the youth. So from a style of play standpoint, amazing. He couldn't be more welcomed. But there are some question marks, and they have to do with his rotation and would he play the youth. But compared to what's going on now, I'm pretty sure 90% of Chelsea fans will absolutely say Conte out, Sarri in. But I'll stop spieling because now I'm getting a little bit too excited thinking about what the type of football would be. So that's my take on it, David.
So excellent analysis. I think you hit on a lot of points that I think people that aren't that familiar with Sarri, it's good that they hear the good and the bad. Now, look, I'm full disclosure, Sarri's probably been my favorite character in all of Italian football, players, managers, you name it, for quite some time. I fell in love with him. I remember when he was managing Empoli, when he traveled to play Napoli at the San Paolo. Empoli had just gone back to Serie A. That day I was in an Italian prison, and no, I wasn't jailed, although some people listening might have enjoyed that outcome have been the case. But no, I was there covering a game between inmates there. And after it, I was watching Empoli play against Napoli. I was just blown away. Such a distinctive style of play. You know, everyone talks about how well Napoli plays now, but Empoli was doing the same with a newly promoted team. Sarri would go into big stadiums against the top teams in Italy and really take it to them and play fantastic. So a sharp contrast from what we're seeing at Conte. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I totally get why you describe Conte as a defensive coach now. That's not what he was when he first started. It kind of evolved into that. So there is that sharp contrast. But, you know, the style of play, what I've learned is, like, nowadays for managers at top clubs, it's so much more than just the style of play that you bring to that. You mentioned the rotations, playing youth. Like, even, you know, not just youth players, but even integrating new players. Like, you know, we've taken a lot of shots at Napoli for the mistakes they made not going after in January, try to bring in more reinforcements. But at the same time, if you're Napoli's president, you're like, look, you know, I could make some big investments, but Sarri's going to keep trotting out the same guys over and over again. The other factor is the press conferences. And look, you know, in the Premier League, we see, you know, it gets a lot of attention when Mourinho does press conferences and whatnot. And Sarri, for one, doesn't really speak English. He said that he only studied that in high school, so it's been at least 30 years. But maybe that would be an advantage, because in Italian, he can be, you know, at times pretty vulgar. I think Sarri doesn't like it when he's being criticized a little bit. Maybe he's a little bit thin-skinned. So that could potentially be a PR disaster. Now, I've been getting a lot of tweets on Sarri, you know, his lack of trophies and titles. I think it's unfair to attack him on that because, A, he's only been in Serie A, I think, 3 or 4 years, not more. He's really only coached at the professional level. It really hasn't been that long. You know, he's in his mid to late 50s, but he was a banker for most of his life. So I wouldn't go on the lack of trophies. I also, I've said it many times, I think one of the main reasons Napoli has nothing to show in the past few years is Juve's strength. So I think Sarri would, yeah, bring a lot of attractive football, but there would be some other things to watch. So again, I wanted to answer all the questions on that. As of now, we have no reports on it. If that changes, we'll tell you more, but I wanted you guys to get a sense of what Sarri is all about. And in the interview segment of the podcast, we're going to have a first-time guest that I think you guys will really enjoy. He is a big Napoli fan that has covers them a lot, so I think you'll get even more perspective on him.
Hey, if Sarri wants to bring Koulibaly over, I'm more than down. More than down. All right, David. We had Serie A midweek, so this is a rare edition, a Thursday edition of Winners and Losers. So who do we got?
So we got quite a few, more on the winner side. So last weekend in Serie A was actually rather boring, a lot of 0-0 matches, and boy, the midweek matches were incredibly exciting. Ton of goals. We had Juve and Napoli's matches. It was really a roller coaster, so very exciting midweek set of games. So let's recap it by naming the winners and losers. Inter played on Tuesday. They won 4-0 against Cagliari. We've said it many times. Usually as Perisic goes, so does Inter. He had a good match. Brozovic continues his very good form in the second half of the season. We saw Caramoa, yeah, he missed some clear chances, but he really brings some excitement, some unpredictability to Inter. So I thought his performance was good overall. And then we had Icardi returning to scoring. A very interesting race with Immobile for the Capocannoniere rest of the way. So a good result for Inter. Then our next winner is our friend Thousand Names, who not only called Crotone drawing against Juve, he said that Simi was going to score, and he had that bicycle kick reminiscent of Ronaldo's one from a previous from the Champions League. So Crotone, a big point for them against Juve. Other winners on Napoli, Milik and Zielinski continue to perform really well for Napoli. Maybe there's some regret that, you know, with Milik it couldn't be helped, but Zielinski probably should have played more. He's been really, really good this season. They put in another good performance. Another winner on Torino, an intriguing winger, Simone Dera. Born in 97, has been an intriguing player for Torino when he comes on the pitch. I think he played 20 minutes against Milan, did well. On Milan, we have to give some credit to Lucas Biglia. He struggled quite a bit. He was out of shape when he first arrived at Milan, but he's made a difference in the past few months. I think he's definitely someone that Milan should consider building around next season. I think he's going to be an important player in their midfield. Then we had Roma, had an important win in the race for the Champions League against Genoa. Kolarov with his 7th assist of the season. He ended up being a very good addition for them. Then we had Lazio in a completely crazy match against Fiorentina. Simone Inzaghi was expelled. There was a lot of controversy. Lazio was down 2-0, made a great comeback, ended up winning. Luis Alberto has been absolutely sensational this season with 2 goals and an assist. We want to give a shout out to Atalanta, traveled to Benevento, and they won 3-0. We had mentioned on Monday their young striker Barrow as a winner. He had played well against Inter. Now he got his first Serie A goal against Benevento. And the last winner is Sassuolo with a very important win for them in the race to avoid relegation against Verona. On the flip side, a couple of losers. Dybala put in a poor performance against Crotone. There's rumors that he might be benched against Napoli. Overall, he's had a good season, but he needs to finish strong for Juve. The flip side to Zielinski is Hamsik has really struggled in recent weeks. I'm going to be curious to see what happens with the starting lineup there, if Hamsik, just out of respect, is going to be playing against Juve. And then finally, we had, as a loser, Spal could have really helped their chances in the race to avoid relegation, but they only drew at home against Chievo, a team also in that race. So exciting midweek matches. Now let's see what's coming up on the weekend. And we have our dear friend Thousand Names send me again picks. Now Thousand Names not only called Simi's goal against Juve, he was 3 for 3 with his predictions during the middle of the week. So I told him he tends to get pretty cocky when he does really well, and I told him to take his time with these predictions. So let's see what he has ready for us. So of course he picked the Juve-Napoli game. Juve fans, I don't think you're going to be totally surprised here. Our friend Thousand Name is picking Napoli to win 1-0. His comment is Milik's going to score, that once again Sarri is going to stop Allegri. I don't know if that's really happened before, but maybe in a Thousand's name that's been the case. He says Juve Stadium is going to be falling to pieces because the fans are going to see the Scudetto going away with Napoli getting some momentum, and he's going to say that Maradona is going to make fun of Platini from Dubai on Twitter, and the whole city of Napoli is going to be celebrating. So in Italian, Juve Napoli 0-1, Milik, Sarri la incarta nuovamente ad Allegri, Conad Stadium a pezzi, vede sfuggire lo Scudetto, Maradona da Dubai sfotte Platini, Sgodazzopoli. Bold statement. I'm going to go against Thousand. I know a lot of Juve fans were freaking out for the match against Crotone. I actually think Napoli has really struggled when they came to Turin. I'd really like to see them win to make the final stretch of the season very exciting. But I'll be surprised. I actually think Juve is going to win. They're going to get back on track. I'm going to have it as 2-0 Juve, and I'm going to give a brace to Higuain against his former team. Next match picked by our friend Thousand Name, Lazio-Sampdoria. Oh, pretty exciting match. So Thousand has Lazio winning 2-1 with a brace by Immobile and a goal by Quagliarella. So here, both of these strikers are from the Naples region. The so is thousand names. So his comment is Torre Annunziata is going to beat Castellammare. Immobiles from Torre Annunziata, Quagliarellas from Castellammare. Di Stabia, also Donnarumma's hometown, and he says the sea and the sun is always going to win in the challenge between the two strikers from Naples. He's going to say Simone. He also says Simone Inzaghi continues to win thanks to luck. In Italian, Lazio Sampdoria 2-1, Immobile Quagliarella, Torre Annunziata batte Castellammare, vince sempre il mare e il sole. Nella sfida tra i due attaccanti napoletani, Simone Inzaghi continua a vincere col culo. Yeah, I agree here. Lazio, the very intriguing race to go for the Champions League spot. I think they're going to win. I'm going to have a 2-0, and I'm going to give a goal to Milinkovic-Savic, who has kind of struggled in the past month or so. I don't know if it's all the pressure of all the transfer rumors, but I think he's going to score in this match, and I'll give Immobile the other. So the last game picked by our friend Thousand Names, Chievo-Inter. He has Inter winning 1-0. Brozovic. So he says in the derby between the two bald guys, Spalletti is going to humiliate Maran by playing well. That Caramo is going to start reminding people of Sterling. A bold take there. So Chievo's really not been themselves this season. Inter, like Lazio's in that race. I'm going to agree with him. I'm going to have Inter winning 1-0, and I'll give Perisic a goal. I'll read it in Italian for friends in Italy. Chievo Inter 0-1, Brozovic nel derby tra Pelati, Spalletti umilia Maran grazie al bel giuoco, Caramo ricorda Sterling. Couple of other matches I want to bring to your attention. We are going to have Roma traveling to Ferrara to face Spal. Milan, I mean, this their season now, they're still trying to go for that Europa League spot. They're going to play at home against Benevento. To our Milan followers, I did a poll today. I'm curious your take, if you prefer that Milan go to the Europa League or that they don't and just focus on trying to get a Champions League spot next season. So that's what's coming up on the weekend in Serie A. Now let's get to some Twitter question. We got quite a few. I'm going to save some of them for Monday just because we have a lot plan for today. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex? And as a reminder, you guys can send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag.
All right, David, let's start off with AC Milan. Between Kalinic, Andre Silva, and Cutrone, who do you prefer up front for Milan?
You know, what's really interesting is this season might be the first time since the mid-80s that Milan's not going to have in Serie A striker or anyone that scored over 10 goals. To me, the big gap between Milan and the teams ahead of them, really the attack. I was even wondering, you know, even during the years of free transfers and loans with Berlusconi and Galliani, at least Milan had a more exciting attack. And now, we know Berlusconi was obsessed with attack, but now it's really pretty grim. So as far as the three that we have now, you know, in a way, it'd be kind of exciting if you could clone all three into one, because I think Cutrone is a good finisher, doesn't have much else outside the box, but a solid finisher. I think Kalinic, you know, he's Mr. System, Mr. Functionality, good with the setting up the lead of play, maybe not so much since he's been at Milan, but he has pretty good technique. I think it's a get. You can't really take that away from him. He just misses a ton of easy chances that Cutrone would probably convert. As far as Andre Silva, you know, maybe he's a little bit of both worlds. I see a lot of people saying, oh, you know, we can't really judge Andre Silva this season. It takes time for strikers to adapt to Italy, and maybe that's fine and all, but a lot of these same people were the one that were making fun of Gabigol at Inter. In Serie A, Andre Silva's output is really pretty dreadful, only 2 goals in 22 matches. Our friend Matteo Bonetti made a really good point on Twitter. Look, with Andre Silva, both Montella and Gattuso didn't play him regularly. I mean, that says a lot when it's multiple managers, especially considering how much Milan invested in. And so, gun to the head, I like Cutrone more than the other two. But I think, in a way, Milan needs to find the striker that takes the best of what these three bring to the table.
All right, staying on a very similar subject, assuming Milan signs a big-name striker in the summer, should they consider loaning out Cutrone or Andre Silva?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wrote about Milan this week in the transfer market. It's really, really hard to predict what they're going to do on the transfer market. They're going to have more idea once UEFA does their ruling on the settlement agreement on financial fair play. You know, there's still the payment to the Elliott Fund up in the air. So I don't want to speculate too much. You know, I'm not sure if Milan, with no Champions League, you know, could even be going for a Cavani Benzema type, even just wages wise. That would be a humongous investment. But maybe someone like Belotti could be a good fit. Gattuso definitely has a lot of affinity for him. But as far as the two, let's say Belotti or someone better comes in. Of the two, you know, in a way, Milan invested a lot in Andre Silva, so it'd be hard after this season to make back what's left of his amortized value on the books. It's almost, in a way, you need to kind of hope Andre Silva gets going and maybe send him to a situation where he can reestablish his value. On the other hand, Andre Silva's 3 years older than Cutrone. Maybe Cutrone needs to play. But personally, I'm not that impressed with Andre Silva. I get it. He's new to Serie A. But I don't know. I would try to reestablish his value and then maybe cut my losses. So of the two, that's probably the one that I would loan, because I think Cutrone can still make an impact even off the bench.
All right, next Twitter question. Will Napoli be remembered for their beautiful style of play or more for failing to live up to the Scudetto Pact?
Well, look, I think both these things are true. Like when you describe Napoli's season, we're going to remember how well they played, although recently they're just not the same. They don't play with that same joy that we saw before. So I'm definitely going to remember that. I'm also going to remember the fact that, you know, the Scudetto Pact as of now, it didn't pay off if they don't win it. They still have a slight chance. I also think it has a lot to do with who you support and what your take is on Juve. I think at the end of the day, it's like, look, are you going to give credit to Juve for how strong and how much they dominate Serie A? If you're in that camp, then you're going to say, okay, Napoli gave their best effort, Juve's just better. So I'm going to remember their beautiful style of play. So I think it really comes down to where you stand on that topic.
All right. Next one. Are Serie A clubs in a position to lure big-name players and compete in this field with La Liga and the Premier League?
So it's an interesting question. I mean, we've seen, you know, in recent years, we've seen some players linked to the Premier League, like, come to Serie A. We've seen Condogobia, you know, join Inter. He had been linked to some Premier League clubs. We saw last summer Milan sign Frank Kessie, who had been linked to all the Premier League clubs, as well as Paris Saint-Germain. Previously, we had seen Dybala, who was linked to all the Premier League clubs, go to Juve. Milan last summer signed Ricardo Rodriguez as well, who had been linked to some Premier League clubs. The way he's played, maybe Milan regrets that. So there are some examples of this, but, you know, this needs to continue. I will say, I was thinking about this question, the one trend that I think is really encouraging is last summer, and these are just four off the top of my head, but I know there are more, we saw Bernardeschi, Skriniar, Schick, and Bonucci change clubs, and they all stayed in Italy. In previous years, players of that caliber for that price would have almost certainly all gone abroad. So there is some hope that Serie A teams can at least retain the top talents there. We've seen some players want to come to Italy over the Premier League, so let's see if that trend continues. But I do think there is some momentum to get us where we need to be, which is to have Serie A teams be even more of a factor on the transfer market.
All right, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. David, what is your favorite Sergio Leone film?
So, very good question. You guys know I love the movie question. So for those of you that aren't familiar with him, Sergio Leone is an Italian director, did a lot of Westerns. He kind of invented a genre called the spaghetti Western. I did a lot of movies with Clint Eastwood and some big Westerns. Not my favorite genre. But there are some classics, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, A Fistful of Dollars, Once Upon a Time in the West. Now, he was also a big influence on Quentin Tarantino. I think Django Unchained and The Hateful Eight definitely have a lot of influence from Sergio Leone movies. The other thing, too, is Sergio Leone His movies always had amazing soundtrack. He had Ennio Morricone, who then won an Oscar for making a movie with Tarantino. The one movie that he did that I like the most, because Western isn't my favorite, is like a crime drama called Once Upon a Time in America with De Niro. Really long movie, really, really good. Not politically correct in any way. If you watch it now more recently, it's just really some of the stuff. I don't get offended either, but there's some stuff out there that's pretty wild. That's a good movie. It has some flaws, but if you're into, you know, Godfather and movies like that, there's definitely some cool stuff there. So very influential director. Good question on movies. Keep them coming. I have one saved for Monday, but you guys know I love answering those. So with that out of the way, here's my reminder that I really appreciate your support. We love getting your questions. If you want to help the podcast grow, please keep retweeting us. Tell a friend what we do. I really appreciate you guys leaving us reviews on iTunes. If you're listening to us on your iPhone, it literally takes 3 seconds. Please leave us a 5-star review. You want to leave a comment, Alex and I always read them. We really appreciate it. If you're more of an Android guy, please follow us on SoundCloud. So I appreciate it there. Now I'm going to introduce our next guest, Aaron Janella. You guys know him on Twitter as Re di Campania. Been wanting to bring him on for quite some time. He's got some very interesting takes on Napoli. I always enjoy discussing things with him. And he's also a scout in DC United, for DC United, a team here in MLS. He focuses more on players that are from the age of 9 to 18, but I think a lot of the concepts apply to older players, and I always like hearing his takes on Twitter on players that he watches. So I think you'll really enjoy this interview. So I'm very excited to have on the podcast for the first time someone that I've been keeping my eye on as a potential guest for a while. We are pleased to be joined by my friend Aaron Giallanella on Twitter. You guys know him as the Re di Campania. Those of you that speak Italian realize what a cool title that is. And what the reason we wanted to have Aaron on is, of course, to talk about the big match between Juve and Napoli, the team that he follows. We wanted to give you guys a better sense of what Sarri is all about from someone that watches him very closely. And we also wanted to get a little bit into scouting of football, because Aaron works with DC United, one of the teams here in MLS. He focuses more on younger players, but I think you'll be very interested to hear his take on that world. So, Aaron, it's a real pleasure. Welcome to Calcio Land this evening.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
Okay, so let's jump in with Napoli. More big picture. We've been talking a lot about them. The one thing that jumped out to me, I have to give them a lot of credit. I thought Napoli wasn't going to recover when back in December Juve went out to San Paolo and beat them. They had multiple injuries, but they came back. They've been putting in a really good fight. But I don't see the same joy, the same freestyle, the same crispiness in their performances. So I wanted to get your take on Napoli, like the past 4-6 weeks or so. What's your take on the way they've been playing?
So first off, start with the good. I was very impressed with how the squad turns it around the other day to come back and win. That was huge, because otherwise I don't even know if we'd be talking about whether they'd still be in the Scudetto race or not. But so what has happened now over the last couple matches feels like the greatest fear of Napoli fans the entire season. So essentially the squad looks a lot more fatigued. Particularly the midfield just looks absolutely burdened, a lot more languid around the pitch. And it's just not having the same connection that they were having earlier on. So it's a little bit nerve-wracking. But that being said, I think what we can take away from the last few weeks is that some of the rotations have really come up big. So what I'd like to see going forward is, now is the chance where we have players who haven't necessarily played much over the course of the season. This is where you have to use them, because otherwise you risk throwing it all out the window with players who just look, quite frankly, too fatigued to keep going.
Very, very interesting. So, you know, one thing, there's been a lot of talk, you know, on Napoli's decision. Definitely the Europa League, I definitely felt they definitely punted that. I don't think they were that eager in the Champions League. I think they were very happy to win the preliminary round, get the revenue, and then kind of make that a secondary objective. And, of course, you know, now there's been a lot of criticism, especially when the Scudetto seemed to have slipped away, although now it's a little bit closer on their decision to solely focus on Serie A. Me personally, I think it was the right thing to do. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast. I think they saw an opportunity. I think people apply standards of other clubs to Napoli, and they're a pretty unique situation. So I wanted to get your take on that. Do you agree with that decision, or looking back, do you think they should have tried a little bit harder in the other competitions?
I think it's easy to say in hindsight, oh, maybe they should have done things differently, but I 100% still stand by it. I mean, there was an opportunity, and still is, to win the league, and I think you just have to go after that. We have to be realistic and say that no matter what, even if Napoli had gone further in the Champions League, we weren't winning it. But the one bone I have to pick with the strategy is that we've rotated fairly well in the first couple matches of the Champions League, but then after the squad was behind on points, Sarri basically defaulted to a full-strength 11. So the second time around with Manchester City, we played basically the standard squad. And if league was always the priority, which I think it was, I'm not entirely sure why they didn't continue to rotate as heavily.
Very, very interesting. So now another question that I have, and we've been asked this multiple times on the podcast. Let's say hypothetically Napoli doesn't win the title. Do you think that has more to do with something they could have done wrong? And look, you've already hinted at some things that could have been a little bit better, or does that have more to do with Juve's strength, especially in Serie A?
A good question. I think it's amazing that when you look at the hypotheticals, in theory, Napoli could finish the season with 96 points and still come in second. So I think you have to be realistic and acknowledge that Juventus has done a tremendous job throughout the course of the season. Napoli has as well, even though it's starting to fizzle out over the last couple of weeks. We've seen some shaky performances, not exactly inspiring over there, but again, I don't understand how you could be too upset with the outcome. You got to look at Juventus winning title after title. They just seem to have a winning formula down. So going into it, I knew it was always going to be a very difficult battle. So I think you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's a very good point on the amount of points Napoli could close the season with, because Roma, under two managers, Garcia and Spalletti, had their most points ever in a season, and both times lost to Juve, and it could potentially be a third time with Napoli. And to me, that speaks much more about Juve than the other team. So now we wanted to get your take on Sarri. Our listeners have heard a lot about me talk about him. Today they got Alex's take on how he would hypothetically fit at Chelsea, but give us your take. You obviously know a lot about the game as a scout, but also you're someone that watches Napoli closely. So if you had to describe Sarri, both his best qualities and maybe his biggest flaws, what would you point to?
So I'd say the first thing you notice right off the bat is how organized they are in possession. Just the fluid movements, the quick passing, triangulation to progress play, that's sort of trademark Napoli. That's what a lot of people think about when they think of the team playing. And really, there's been times under Sarri where it's looked like a work of art. Incredibly fun to watch. And I do, however, think that there are some caveats with the system, of course. Nothing is perfect, and obviously we have to look at both sides of it. But to start with the actual system, I think what separates it from some of the other systems we look at is they're a bit more lackadaisical when pressing from the forward line. Whereas I feel the midfielders do a great job, sometimes, you know, up top, we're not quite applying the same pressure on the defense as we could be. And then there's the issue with rotation, which, if you follow me on Twitter, you know how much of a grievance that is for me, just where I don't necessarily feel that Napoli has a bad squad, and I don't necessarily feel that they're as limited as they made out to be. we have some players that did quite well at other clubs, and there's no real discernible reason for me why these players haven't gotten more match time. So I'd say that's the one biggest thing I'd be worried about, potentially having Sarri as a coach. And then furthermore, I feel Sarri has a tendency to get rattled in press conferences after losses. Yeah, so he gets himself in trouble, saying the wrong thing at times. Yeah, very colorful personality. But I think if you were in somewhere like the Premier League, for example, they'd really have to be careful and sit down with him and give him some PR training, because I just knowing how the English media is, that could be a potential downfall with him.
Yeah, very well said. And you know what? I'm very glad you brought up a Napoli squad, because I totally agree with you. I think their depth is much better than people give them credit for. I think, you know, they've actually gone in a lot of different ways. They've taken some good prospects from abroad. We've had Raj, Milik. They've tried to get some Serie A veterans that did well on other teams, Tonelli, Maximovic, Giaccherini, and then they don't really play. So I'm very glad you pointed that out, because I'm totally with you on that. So now let's talk about a few members of the squad. So I'm going to ask you about two players that I get asked a lot about on transfer rumors, and that's Jorginho and Koulibaly. So I want to get your take on them. And since I'm asking you about two players that are near and dear to you that are involved with transfer rumors of potentially leaving, I'm going to let you pontificate on the greatness of Diarra, player I know you really like, and I feel the same way on. So tell me about these three players. You can go in any order that you want. How would you describe them to someone who doesn't follow Serie A religiously?
So for Jorginho, I think, what's a good way to say it? Maybe, like, if you're used to watching Spain or Italy, definitely some elements of a Sergio Busquets type of player. So the difference with Napoli's buildup is he's not so likely to drop back into the actual defense. So he's perfectly capable sitting in between the defense and the midfield, very good at the base of the midfield there. He's an amazing passer. I think that's one of the first things you realize when you watch him. Very careful in possession. And I think to an extent, his decision-making doesn't get enough credit, where sometimes I've seen people almost dismiss it as playing the safe option. But a lot of the times it sparks a huge sequence which leads to a goal. So I really don't discount what he brings to the club. And he has improved his offensive ability over the past 12 months or so. So I think there is some more progression yet to come for him. Great player. So Koulibaly, I think if you look at him and you look at his frame, the first thing you might think is that he's might not be the greatest passer, because you don't necessarily anticipate the really tall, bigger defenders to be great passers, but that couldn't be further from the truth. I've seen under Sarri, he's made some incredible improvements with his passing.
For sure.
Very, very confident in possession and on the ball. Seeing him with the ball just is a reassuring presence for me. And then just a brick wall defensively. He's quick, he's strong, he tackles well, he steps up to intercept well. I think to an extent in the modern game, quite a few defenders, you know, are doing the standard job and are good at making clearances, but Koulibaly really excels just at stepping up. So really like to watch him. And he does well in the air, but there are times when he's beaten. He's not quite unbeatable. I think we saw a couple of matches ago at Sassuolo. But yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about him. I really wouldn't like to lose him. So
yeah.
All those people that are asking you, do you think he'll leave? I hope the answer is no, because I honestly don't know who Napoli could sign that would give us the same presence at the back.
Yeah, I think he's the best center back in Serie A right now. I really do. And I think you've said it really well. He's gotten so much better under Sarri. So I agree with you there, and I hope he stays because I think he's the most irreplaceable player on Napoli when I look at the rest of the squad. So let's close on Diarra, your boy. I know you love this player, so do I. So how would you describe him to people that aren't familiar with his game? I know everyone, you know, has probably seen the matches against Real Madrid, the great performance at the Bernabeu. So tell us a little bit more about him.
So in him, I see a complete player who's has an excellent mentality. I just feel he's psychologically very strong. I think we saw that when he took the penalty versus Manchester City. He doesn't seem overawed by big occasions, as you said, like Real Madrid, for example. He really held his own there. And I love what I love about him is just that I think he has the skill set to be such a well-rounded player. And his decision-making, passes under pressure, particularly his short passes, are very, very good. Excellent reader of the game. And to an extent, I wonder if his future lies further forward. I could see him blossoming into a more slightly more advanced role, maybe like a more box-to-box role in another system. But really, the sky is the limit for him, and I would like to keep him at all costs. And I know I'm saying this as a fan, as someone who really wants him to succeed, but I think it would be a disservice to have another season where, you know, he starts four or five matches. Because for me, that's the biggest crime that Sarri has committed with some of these players. In their brief appearances, it's not really like he looked terrible in any of them. So there were a couple matches where I thought he played very well, and then he wouldn't feature in the squad for a couple weeks at a time. Maybe even months, and that's a real caveat. I think we can't. When you have players like that, you can't ignore that, and you can't bank on them staying until you're ready to play them. And it would be a real shame to lose them.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I have Napoli on my career mode in FIFA. I sold Jorginho and I built around Diarra, and that's what I would do in real life. So let me ask you about a couple more players, but one specifically. I mean, he's been really impressive since he came back. Milik, I think he's been really outstanding coming off the bench. And look, you know, because Mertens has been so good as the false nine, we almost forget that when Milik first arrived to Napoli at Ajax, he was absolutely crushing it. So I wanted to get your take, not so much, you know, compared to Mertens, but would you be okay if Napoli's attack next season is built around Milik and what he brings to the table?
100%. I think Milik should be the way going forward. He's an all-around number nine, and as you mentioned, the other day, he's done pretty much well whenever he's played. So when he wasn't recovering from injury and when he looks like he's 100%, he looks great to me. Another thing I like about him, which I can't emphasize enough, is mentally he's so strong. And I think a lot is focused, obviously, on what is the toll of the ligament injuries he suffered? What toll is that going to take on his body? But what's not often talked about as much is the mental toll that takes a player, you know, to go through one long injury and then very quickly get re-injured again. But from all the training videos and posts on his Instagram and just his general conduct, he seems to have a great head on his shoulders. And so he's a player that you really hope does well.
Yeah, I'd be very excited to see what he could do as a starter for a full season. I know a lot of people point to his injuries, but look, you know, they've been kind of catastrophic injuries. I'm more concerned in general if a player has a lot of nagging muscular injuries. I think with Milik, it's more a matter of bad luck. So let me ask you about the big game on Sunday. Now, as I'm preparing the interview, you know, there was such a roller coaster ride of the matches. It looked like, you know, it wouldn't be much of a match for the Scudetto race, but now it actually is. So I want to get your prediction on the match, and I want to ask you about the lineup. Hamsik, you know, has really kind of struggled recently. So would you like to see maybe Zielinski starting? I've seen some papers have maybe Zielinski starting up over Allan with Hamsik, or how would you like to see the midfield lineup?
So I say you got to go bold. This is a must win game. No room for error. And if we have to be realistic, it's going to be an incredibly tough match. You know, last win at Juventus, 2009, I believe. So it's not going to be a walk in the park. I won't I won't tell you I'm incredibly confident about it. But that being said, I think you have to make changes. As a point I was hitting on earlier when we talked, I think now is the chance where you have to use some of the underutilized players. So as far as the midfield, I would go Zielinski, I would go Alon, and then I would think about putting Diawara there. I wouldn't mind seeing him and Alon more in like a double pivot with Zielinski a little bit further forward. I think that could give them some great stability in the middle. And I would play Milik up top because Mertens has traditionally struggled against Juventus. He looked very tired his last couple outings. So I'm more in the camp, you know, let's make these rotations while we can. So I think you have to really show what's the word I'm looking for? You have to really show some
boldness.
Courage in this match. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think even surprising Juve a little bit would be interesting. Yeah, that is a pretty bold take. So speaking of bold, what's your expectation for the result if you have to guess? I know what you want the result to be, and I kind of agree with you. I want the end of the season to be fantastic, but realistically, what do you think is going to happen?
Realistically, I could see it ending 1-1. I'd like to think that we wouldn't lose again, but I know that may not be the case. But going in the same vein, I'd let too many people down if I came on here and didn't say that I was going to go for a Napoli match. So in the spirit of that, I'm going to say 3-2 Napoli, Scudetto race wide open.
Love it. And yeah, I saw you tweeted the last time Napoli won, and I'm getting old and I forget stuff. And I was like, who the hell is Jesus Dottolo? I was like, what is happening to me? I don't remember these players anymore. So it's been a while. So now let's shift up to your job as a scout, because this is really interesting to me. I really like reading your tweets on this, and you always make suggestions to people if they're watching games, what to look for. So before we get to that, just give our listeners an idea of your role with DC United's Academy.
Certainly. So for about 6 months, I've been working as a scout for the Academy, mostly ages 9 to 18 for our developmental squads. Since I'm located in Baltimore, my main scouting ground is in and around the city. There's quite a bit of untapped potential in the area. When I came aboard, they actually did not have someone living in Baltimore, so it's a bit tougher for them to get out to matches there. However, I've gone all over to help with talent centers. I'm actually going to North Carolina this weekend to assist at one with a partner club. And it's a very unique setup where we'll primarily focus within a 90-mile radius of DC, because this is where we can sign players, and they're qualified for homegrown status. But another probably more important reason why is because players from further out just can't get over to practice more often.
But interesting.
So essentially I'll go to matches or talent centers, which think of them as just large open tryouts, write reports on players I like. I'll give a recommendation, and depending on what season it is and how urgently we want to move forward with the player, we'll try to invite them in for a tryout.
Very interesting. And I've seen you tweet this, and I always find it really interesting. What types of things do you look for when you're looking at a player or maybe multiple players during a game? Like, I know you don't focus on too many players, which makes perfect sense to me. So tell me a little bit about your method and what kind of attributes are you looking to see in a player? And you're looking at younger ones, but I really think like a lot of these same characteristics like really translate to the professional level. So tell me the things that you look for.
So there are so many things, but if I had to break it up into three categories, I'd say technical, physical, and psychological, where first and foremost, we're looking, does a player do the fundamentals right? Do they pass well? Are they tactically intelligent? That sort of thing. And then physical, which I'd probably say for most age groups, until you get really high up, probably the least important attributes that we're looking at. So we're looking to see how strong the player is, how fast they are, acceleration, all sorts of things like that. But we wouldn't necessarily write off a player because he's small. I think that's a way that some of these programs have gotten behind in the past where they haven't accounted for future growth and development. And on the other end of the spectrum, we'll occasionally see players that move very awkwardly. And usually that happens when players have recently had like a massive growth spurt. Like I remember watching this one player who we had heard such good things about, and I just thought the way he moved was a bit funny. And then I found out from his coach later that he had grown something ridiculous, like 6 inches in like the past 8 months or something wild like that. So a lot of the times it's about those players growing into their bodies and, you know, seeing how they go up from there. And then finally, the psychological aspect, which I think is perhaps the most important thing to actually be there and watching, is all the other factors. You know, how well do these players respond to the directions of coaching? How well do they respond to adversity? That's huge for me. So it's just as important to see how a player reacts going down a few goals as going up a few goals. And usually the players who tend to get invited for tryouts are the ones that are relentless. They're enjoying the game. They're communicating well with teammates. And above all, they're working hard every minute they're on the pitch.
Fantastic. That was really, really interesting. So let me close it on this. And I want to thank you. The really outstanding job for your first time on the podcast. I'm not a big guy with stats. I mean, I think they do serve a purpose. I personally think a lot of times statistics have more to do with a player's opponent, his teammates, situations, and whatnot. I'm much more of, I actually want to watch a player and ideally in person. So tell me, as someone that does this now, scouting for a living, how much do you think statistics matter compared to watching someone live? I always get a kick out of, if you ask your Twitter followers, you know, I want to watch a game on this player, recommend me something, and instead of giving you a game, they're giving you a description of a player probably that they read on the site. So I went with that rant, but give me your take on statistics and how important they are in evaluating a player.
So one of the things that I think you just implied, and it's absolutely right, is that one, I would never feel comfortable relying wholly on statistics for my decision on a player. Like for me, the eye test is supreme. I do, however, feel statistics can help, and there are loads of analysts who are working on some state-of-the-art metrics right now. I've been told that there's a few guys actually at San Jose Earthquakes right now that are doing this groundbreaking software, which is going to be a huge step for data analysis for younger players. It's just something I've heard. I don't really know where they're at in the project. Sometimes it does feel like it's really a debate between stats versus traditional scouting. But in truth, in the modern game, they really go hand in hand, and we embrace each other. So there will always be room for guys that are out on the stand using the eye test for players as they pick up hundreds of things, really. And that's really where I feel the strength of scouting in person comes into play. You know, you're seeing things that no computer program would ever be able to tell you. And like, there's often times where, like, just to go on a brief tangent, I wouldn't even discount watching a warm up when I go scouting. I'd say oftentimes, sometimes even pick out the best players just from the warm-up. Not to 100% success, but it can really tell you a lot. And that's where, again, things like psychological play, reacting to adversity, that sort of thing can be so important. But likewise, there are always improvements made in the analytics camps. From what I've seen and what I've read, I really try to keep up with the people that produce content on those sort of things. It's really amazing. And just going forward, you know, it's important for clubs to be conscientious of both.
Fantastic. So, Aaron, you did a fantastic job. So, everyone, if you enjoyed hearing his takes, you can follow him at Radi Campagna. You'll find the handle on the Twitter description of the episode. So, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. And for the Napoli.